Welcome to the White Book Podcast, the original A Game of Thrones LCG podcast.
Originally founded in 2010, as Two Champs and a Chum, we decided to rebrand when the game relaunched in the second edition. A huge thank you goes out to Fantasy Flight Games and George R. R. Martin for this game and the world we love, and of course to my co-hosts and you, the listeners. Please, if you enjoy the show, leave us a review on iTunes or your platform of choice, comment on our Facebook threads, or even better, support us on Patreon. We love turning that kind of support back into the community.
This is Season 12 of the White Book Podcast. Okay, here we are back with White Book / Drops and Slops this week with episode 475. Look at that. Roy did count correctly a few weeks ago that 475 would be Props and Slops.
Roy's very smart when he wants to be.
It's very true. He's once called Smart But Sloppy by a professor, and it was the most insightful thing about me that he said.
Oh, Smart But Sloppy, the Roy Rogers story.
It very much is. It very, very much is.
Welcome to Props and Slops. You know who Roy is. I'm Aaron, and our gregarious host is...
I guess that's me. I'm Will. I'm not used to being described as gregarious.
You are definitely gregarious.
Okay, I'll take it.
Roy, back me up here.
Yeah, he's gregarious, yeah.
Yeah. Which is ironic, because the Greg we know is the opposite of that.
Oh my god, there we go.
You went out for dinner with him, so it just, yeah. You should just, next time you see him, be like, hi, Arius, and he'll be like, what are you talking about? And just never tell him. Don't worry about it.
It'll be great. It'll be great. Well, 475. Normally, that is a big milestone episode for us that we try to do something, you know, big and exciting for on these 25s. And I hate to break the news to anybody, but I didn't have anything for that this time around. So you just get a regular episode. You're welcome.
Hey. Our good friend David T of Germany still listens to this podcast. So hi, David. We love you. Sorry. David gets to be our only listener from now on.
Your old news.
Your old news, Sam. He messaged me to be like, hey, by the way, you have another listener. What was that game thing you talked about? And I was like, oh my god, you listened to your...
The game thing being one of the many JRPGs you've talked about?
Oh, I have absolutely... I don't even remember. I can look through our text, but he was like, you named a thing, and I wasn't sure what you said, but I want it. So I told him what it was. I'm going to find out.
Maybe it was your cool handheld.
It might have been. It might have been. That thing is very fun. It doesn't play Dreamcast as well as I want it to, but it. I've been playing... Well, we'll get there. We'll come to that.
Okay, we'll get there.
The Pen and Paper Podcast, Adventure Zone.
Okay.
Oh, Adventure Zone.
People, I knew it was game related. Yeah, it's the D&D area is really, really good. So you watch T-Man. Dirtbags tend to hate it. Are you propping it or slopping it?
Technically, was it Masters of the Universe : Revelations?
Oh, man. Wow.
I'm pretty just like... fine with it. It's weird. I was talking to another friend about it earlier today. I think one of the biggest problems with it is kind of the pacing of the story that I think maybe it wants to tell. I certainly don't feel the sort of internet rage that some people do about the, remember, we are a spoiler full episode or a podcast about the kind of bait and switch, as people have called it.
Oh my God.
You know what it is, Roy?
I don't care. So
He-Man and Skeletor die in episode one.
Amazing. Yeah. I'm sorry. That's the greatest thing Kevin Smith has ever done in his life. I love it. That's amazing. Yeah. They do.
And then Teela becomes the main character. And then
Kevin.
Sorry. Spoilerful, so bear with me.
We said spoilerful. I also didn't just drop
the
it
first
out.
Episode.
Well, no, I was gonna say, then they come back to life, and then Prince Adam, I think, dies again.
What? Back to life in this over-the-top superhero franchise called He-Man, based on a at best mediocre cartoon from when none of us were alive. No,
hey, I was alive.
Whoa.
I've always forget. It's not the late 70s. It's the mid-80s. So all of us.
It's not the Herculoids.
Excuse me. But we're all very small children. Excuse me. I apologize. We're all very small children. I am so surprised. Wow. Wow.
I mean, look. At the end of the day, I just like that it pissed everyone off. It's something I would watch, but like, they couldn't make Thundercats good. And like, Thundercats is inherently good, so I don't think they're going to make He-Man good. And Kevin Smith is really hit or miss. But like,
almost always miss.
A plus to pissing people off.
Like,
look,
this is fine. Like, I just feel like the pacing is weird. Like, I felt like it needed. Okay, I should back up slightly and say this is only 5 episodes. That's all there is of this right now, which feels kind of wild to me. They drop you right in. They immediately kill kind of like definitely the titular character and the main bad guy, and then give you this like entirely different premise. I just felt like that was maybe a little too rushed. Like if we'd gotten the first 5 episode kind of arc and what was the actual episode one was the end of those 5 episodes. Like if that was the finale cliffhanger was, oh no, He-Man and Skeletor just died. What now? Like, I feel like that plays better. And that gives you time to set up because Teela kind of goes straight from being like super trustworthy. I'm just being named captain of the guard and blah, blah, blah. I'm finally, you know, getting promoted and I'm going to succeed my father and so on and so forth. To finding out that Prince Adam is He-Man and then turning her back on like everything and everyone in this like rage filled storm out of the like throne room that just felt weird, like kind of a 180. So yeah, pacing just feels weird. I think it needed a little more time to introduce this premise to get there. Give us that thing as a cliffhanger. Then in like the next arc, give us a chunk that was the story we currently got about like, what does a world without He-Man look like? And then big spoiler alert, this 5 episode chunk ends with Skeletor kind of being reborn and, you know, becoming Kefka, becoming this evil god and giving you that cliffhanger. And, you know, then one arc at the end after that. I think it just needs more room to breathe.
So it really, 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 really wanted to be Castlevania season one, but Kevin Smith is not as good at writing as Warren Ellis.
What?
Probably. But the animation, I do have to say, is actually by the same studio. And it is really solid, I thought. So that's good. And the voice cast is astounding. Like Lena Headey plays Evil Lynn, who becomes one of our main characters. Sarah Michelle Gellar is Teela. Chris Pine as Prince Adam / He-Man. Liam Cunningham.
A lot of money on the voice cast.
Yeah. Liam Cunningham as Man-at-Arms, who I had to double check. I was like, why does this voice sound familiar? Who is that? That's Davos from Game of Thrones, of course. Like this is a big name cast. And I mean, and of course Mark Hamill himself as Skeletor, who, you know, probably one of the most recognizable voice actors around.
Ooh. Yeah, I mean the problem with Mark Hamill
is that one movie.
As a voice actor is he generally only has Joker voice and Mark Hamill voice. He's not someone who like has a huge amount of voice.
like actor depth. He's a very talented voice actor doing those two things. Like, you want your character to sound like Mark Hamill, or you want your, or you have the Joker.
I mean, if you could have your character sound like the Mark Hamill Joker, why would you ever pick anything else?
Well, I
mean, reasonable.
Skeletor sounding like the Mark Hamill Joker is a little weird to me, because, like, why wouldn't I just watch Batman animated series or various other things? But it, anyway, I just was amazed at how pissed off people were on the internet. Like, yeah. I'm not even talking about the D-Gen, like, fuck, you know, fucking idiots, you know, on YouTube. Those people, who cares about them? I'm talking about, like, normal people. Like, a couple other, like, group chats I have with nerdy friends, like, were popping off about this. They had so many strong opinions about He-Man by Kevin Smith. I just, my mind was kind of like, what?
A show that was originally created to sell toys. And I don't say that in the generic offhand way I say about any cartoon. No, I mean, He-Man was the most vehicle of vehicles, specifically
Transformers, G.I. Joe. They were all toy companies, yeah.
I mean, He-Man was particularly bad, but yeah.
Yeah.
Mild props to the toys that made us.
Yeah, I still need to watch that.
It is fine.
I give mild props, while we're on that topic, to Masters of the Universe Revelations. We'll see where it goes from here. But five episodes also felt crazy short, even for Netflix.
I mean, that's, I mean, I think the first season of Castlevania was four. They're literally just trying to do Castlevania.
Really? It was that short? I thought it was eight.
I believe so. No, I don't think so. Someone's Googling this, right? I believe I heard
Yeah, I'm doing it right now. And holy shit, it was only four episodes long.
Damn, son. All right.
It felt longer. It just did it so much better, I guess.
That's just a sign that that was a quality television show.
Right?
Qualidad.
You know.
Yeah. All right. Apparently, Will also watched The Good Witch. That seems like a thing Roy watched.
Why did mine just happen to be at the top, and we didn't alternate these at all?
I'll move us as we go.
Okay, so The Good Witch, yeah. Kristen got me hooked on that. For anybody that is unaware of the show, it was a Hallmark Channel original starring Catherine Bell. It originally started as a series of movies that were all connected there, and then they eventually killed off a main character and converted it to a TV show, picked up James Denton, that kind of thing.
Classic.
Yeah.
Classic Lifetime stuff.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. But it kind of had a nice vibe, like, I don't know, kind of a Hallmarkified Gilmore Girls light, like really early on, and that was kind of how it was when Kristen introduced me to it. You know, it definitely had a lot of the mother-daughter interplay and stuff and dating, and of course the main character, the Good Witch, Cassie, ran a bed and breakfast, and you know, stuff like that. She
titular Good Witch.
I almost said that phrase, but I already used titular once this episode and figured that's really not the sort of word you should use more than once.
I did it this time. You're safe.
Thank you.
LOL.
So yeah, she'd help guests, you know, kind of a romance of the week sort of thing, help her, some guests at the bed and breakfast find love and all that type of stuff. And the whole witch thing was very wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Like, they would have it be little coincidental things. Stuff like, she'd always have her back turned and someone would walk into a room and she would say hi, you know, Sam or whoever, before seeing who it was or before they said anything. Very little things like that. And then this season, which I didn't know was the final season until the penultimate episode, excuse me. And this season went like in a wildly different direction. Seemed like they switched showrunners or something. The tone went totally different. There were never any guests at the bed and breakfast. She also ran like a little gift shop apothecary thing in town that was not shown the entire season. Like, people broke up. It seemed like she was maybe going to ditch her husband. Suddenly the magic stuff was like front and center. It went from being Gilmore Girls light to suddenly being Charmed light. And it was such a like whiplash of tone. And then the show just kind of ended. And on such a downer, like one of the other main characters who has been with in a relationship with someone else, they had to, you know, beat this old family curse and that sort of thing that was a little more magic-y than the early seasons, but still kind of, oh, maybe it's all just coincidences sort of thing. They pulled the whole, well, it's the final episode of the show and we're down to the last 5 minutes, so I guess it's time to break up now, right? It was just so weird. So I slop it.
Okay.
Okay. Let's jump down to Lethal Weapon, which I'm assuming was Roy.
It was me. I found out that wow. Lethal Weapon, the original, I'm talking about, I realized that there was a recent television show, Lethal Weapon.
Oh, there was?
Yeah, apparently there was.
I did not know that.
Was it aggressively homophobic? Sorry, continue.
Was it on Fox? I assume it aired on Fox.
I mean, the original Lethal Weapon is aggressively homophobic and aggressively misogynist. But it is also hilarious. Not hilarious because the jokes land, but the entire movie itself, as it exists here in the year of our Lord 2021, is a fucking hilarious movie. And the whole time that I was watching, I was like, it was a very chicken and the egg. It had every action movie stereotype. I was wondering, did it invent those stereotypes? Or is it just the like apex of all action movies exists in this one thing.
I'm going to go with the apex, right? Surely.
It's like old enough at this point and influential enough on post Lethal Weapon. Like it was so successful post Lethal Weapon action movies that it's hard to tell. It is a wonderful piece of really poorly aged 80s pop culture. There's just a lot in that movie. And I found out that the whole franchise is on HBO Max, so I will be before watching at least Lethal Weapon 2, which I remember as a kid being batshit crazy. And if as a child I thought it was batshit crazy, then it's going to definitely be amazing as an adult because it has South African villains. And after having spent 3 months of my life digging into the history of South Africa for my job, it was the unit that we did. Our paper one unit, for those IB people out there, evil South Africans. That's what I'm all about. Evil South Africans, white South Africans in the 80s. And so, yeah, if you are in the mood for really bad in an enjoyable way, and you can of course stomach the ways in which aspects of it have aged extremely poorly, I would definitely prop it for being a truly, truly awful but amazing film to watch in the year of our Lord 2021.
Before we go too far, can I also mention something awful that's related to this?
Mel Gibson's existence.
Yes, Mel Gibson's existence.
This might be worse. I'm not sure. So I, too, Aaron, did not know that there was a Lethal Weapon TV show. So I looked it up on IMDb just now, and I'm staring at the poster at the top of the page. And yes, I will say, number one, I was correct. It had to have been a Fox TV show, and it is. But can you, sir, tell me who you would guess the two main characters on this poster to be? The actors, that is.
Oh, I can't. I'm not good enough with actors. For that.
I'm not top of my head. No, I wouldn't be able to.
Damon Wayans.
What?
And Stifler.
No,
I'm sorry. Sean William Scott. No, but Stifler. All I can see is Stifler.
Wow. Oh, That's bro. Riggs and Murtaugh?
Yes.
You should watch this. I feel like it's right up your alley.
It's on Hulu, though. I hate Hulu. God.
All right. So I watched the Woodstock 99 documentary.
Yeah, that just dropped on Netflix, right?
On HBO Max.
Oh, okay.
It's fucking by Bill Simmons, which I might not have watched if I'd realized that in advance. Like, man, it annoys me to no end. But yeah, I don't like my generation. It's basically what I got from it. I'm happy I didn't go because I was literally I had just graduated high school. And it was an utter disaster that was exactly up my alley in 1999. I didn't like my generation. I definitely don't like 17, 18-year-old me. So thanks for that reminder. It was horrible and awkward. And, like, the music was really bad. Like, not, like, kind of ironically bad. Like, Limp Bizkit isn't, like...
Okay, I was going to say, who was that at the time? Limp Bizkit was going to be my guess.
It's your Limp Bizkits and your Korns and your Kid Rocks. And, like...
Were they rolling?
Oh, my God. No, it was apparently Nookie. And, like, it's just... Like,
yeah.
And, like, Fred Durst apparently, like, just straight up tried to incite the riot. The promoters were completely incompetent. Like, it was just, like, it's everything about the people I grew up with I remember, but I hadn't thought about in long enough. And, like, God, Woodstock 1999 was a disaster. Like, a cultural wasteland. And anyone who has any nostalgia for that time period, please reconsider.
There was really only one bright point in all of 99, and that was a day I think we all remember and treasure, September 9th, 1999, the release date of the Sega Dreamcast.
Fair enough. 99, I do remember that.
I thought you were going to go for the Phantom Menace.
I mean, look.
It was actually 1998, wasn't it?
No, I think it was 99.
No, I think it was 98. But it was also the first school shooting in America.
It's 99, by the way. I was pretty sure it was 99.
Yeah, I thought you were right at 99.
It was the first school shooting in America, which they make sure to bring
up. Glazer's 4 years older than me. So
I am. I'm old. I'm 4D. Soon.
Four dimensionals.
I am four dimensional.
Aren't we all?
All right. That's what I got for Woodstock 91. If you are young enough to have not remembered it, it is worth watching and realizing that, yes, my generation is that terrible. If you are of my generation and go, oh, it wasn't that bad, watch it and remember that it was, and otherwise avoid.
Like, is it a poorly made
documentary? No, it's a perfectly well-made documentary. It's just entirely about terrible and stupid people who are angry and shitty. And then it's like, by the way, here's how angry and shitty we were. Like, I had forgotten Girls Gone Wild existed. I forgot what's happening.
You've forgotten Girls Gone Wild existed? You really wiped
Wait, a lot. I forgot Woodstock 99 happened. I remember Woodstock 94. Woodstock 94 was, like, in my 13-year-old life, a, like, momentous event. Wow. And then, like I loved Woodstock 94. Like, all the mud thing, it looked so fun. I had completely forgot Woodstock 99 existed. I forgot Girls Gone Wild existed.
Next thing you know, Aaron, you're going to tell me that you forgot Warped Tour
existed. I'm pretty sure that
I wish
I have repeatedly said on this show that the late 90s, early 2000s is a cultural pit. And that I would roughly say, like, 1996 to 2006, that 10-year, that decade right there, is awful and really set our country back and our culture in, like, ways that we, and I mean this as someone who we've got a cusp Gen X or cusp millennial Aaron here, and then Will and I, who are geriatric, right? Is it geriatric?
I am by most countings the first generation of millennial, but I am still sometimes Gen X.
Your cusp, yeah. That's why we like our generation's youth culture is terrible. That was a terrible time. America did so many fucked up things. in the late Clinton, the second Clinton administration and the Bush administration, that like we are still dealing with the leg. Like a lot of the problems we have today come from the decisions, both cultural and political, that were made in that time period. And like a lot of progress that was even made in the 1980s. And 1980s sucks. Like that also sucks in different ways, particularly on the cultural realm. But a lot of progress and things that people learned in the 1980s, they proceeded to forget 6 years later after the 1980s end. And we get truly, really the nadir. Even on a pop culture level, that period is in many ways a nadir in the way the 1980s is not. On a cultural level. Political level, more complicated. But definitely on a cultural level.
Yeah, no, it's
fuck the turn of the century.
It's a disgusting disaster of disgusting disaster proportions. Like, you just watch it, and, like, if you lived it, it's like, oh, God, we were so terrible. And, like, every way, it's like, there's nothing good to say. All right, whatever. Let's move on. But strong slops to humanity in 1999. Props to the documentary, I guess, vaguely, if you need the reminder, which I guess I did, because I had literally blocked 90% of that out. Just, like, I don't know. Being 18 was just, like, being extraordinarily stupid, but, like... Like, I think being 18 means sort of being extraordinarily stupid, mm-hmm. but being 18 in 1999, meant being extraordinarily stupid, extraordinarily angry, and really confused all the time.
Well,
all right, let's jump back up to something that must have happened in 99, right? What? The Olympics.
2000, wasn't it? The 2000?
Was it? Sure.
2000.
Okay, 2000 Olympics, but well, there's also one now, so go.
Alas, I don't have a whole lot to say about the Olympics other than I haven't had time to do a whole lot of other things because, you know me, I don't really follow sports all that much, but every time the Olympics come around, I turn into a junkie. I just really love watching the Olympics. I love seeing weird, I say, sports, let's say non-mainstream sports that I would never see on like primetime television. Suddenly there's a freaking handball game between like Latvia and Spain in front of me. And I'm like, holy crap, this is amazing. Or the other day I was reminded San Marino is the country whose name I was goofing slightly. Yeah. Like I watched them earn their first ever medal in the Olympics in, I believe it was skeet shooting the other day.
Jesus Christ. Sorry. Yeah. Skeet shooting is an Olympic sport. It's just like...
Everything's an Olympic sport now. But who cares? It's all...
Skateboarding is. It was wild to me. I caught a little bit of the tail end of women's street skateboarding the other day. And they were down to like the last three competitors that were potentially in the running for the gold medal. And one of the commenters was talking about how, you know, if I can't remember any of their names, unfortunately, but they're talking about how this one competitor wins, like she'll be the old lady of the group or something like that. Because
like 22.
Oh, no. The three that were left in contention for the gold medal were a 13-year-old, a 16-year-old who was the old lady, and another 13-year-old.
I mean, skateboarding is a young person's game.
It is. It's just, it's wild, wild seeing some of this stuff. So I find it all fascinating that's what happens. I just go on an Olympics dive.
Hmm. All right. Going from one extremely intense athletic competition to another, AEW Dynamite is a wrestling show. Wrestling has been basically horrible and embarrassing since like 1997 at like least. Like it's genuinely terrible. However, if you like it or are a lapsed fan or anything, AEW is delightful. It's 2 hours every Wednesday. I watch it. As I watch it, I'm in like a text chat with one group of friends and a Facebook group with another, and it's really fun. Like we watch, we talk shit. It's delightful, it's fun, it doesn't ever insult your intelligence. It's the male soap opera you would like if you were ever a fan. They signed two big stars, so they should be getting like a decent push, CM Punk and Bryan Danielson. And like if
CM
you're
Punk, wow.
Yeah. He quit 7 years ago and hates WWE because they're a terrible company that, you know, covers up murders and supports dictators. And like, literally, they're like the worst people on earth. So he hates them. But yeah, he's coming back August 20th at their like new Friday show from 10 to 11. And like, he'll be around. But it's going to be if you like wrestling in the slightest, I really, really strongly urge you to check it out. It is absolutely excellent and super enjoyable. Highest prop.
Oh, wow.
What's Outer Banks?
Well, speaking of soap operas. So Outer Banks is a teen show on, I think I've talked about it on this show before, the first season, on Netflix. The first season came out 2019, maybe? Let me look real quick. It might have been 2020. Oh, yep, so it was 2020. So it came out early COVID. Early COVID. Okay, that makes sense. I thought it was right before COVID. And it is about a group of teenagers who are led by someone who has the wonderful name John B., which makes me laugh every single time they say this character's name. That's what they call him, John B., like you're in kindergarten. He wants to solve why his father disappeared. And that's where it starts. And it's set, of course, in the Outer Banks. And it's an absolutely ridiculous television show. The first season, it is like a kind of, it's some, you know, episodes will be kind of like a unarchied Riverdale kind of thing. You know, like it doesn't have that, like, you know, it's not tied to any specific, you know, it's like a teen drama, pretty normal, like a normal CW show, you know, like, and then suddenly there'll be like a Lethal Weapon Born Identity style action sequence. And it's like, what the fuck is this? Like, why is this person, like, it's not quite that good, but it's just like, why is there suddenly this action sequence here? What is going on in this? And it's a show, and this is what I appreciate with these kind of television shows, that owns how batshit fucking nuts it is and just, like, leans into it. It's like, okay, here's a ridiculously insane thing that happens. Cool. Awesome. 20 minutes later, something equally crazy happens. 20 minutes later, end of episode. All right, then the next episode starts, something crazy happens. And it's just like, you know what? I appreciate your willingness to just constantly blow up your own premise every 20 minutes with just something else. And, you know, the young actors are fine. They all have good chemistry with each other. It's like, it gets a little slow towards the middle when they slow it down. And then the last, like, three episodes are pure. It's like the first three episodes are really good. Then there's like the first season, the middle two episodes are kind of like a little slow. They start, you know, trying to be like serious and stuff. And then they're like, nah, forget serious. Let's just crank it to 100 for the last two episodes. And it ended on a really strong note of stupidity, of just like active stupidity by all the characters, the adult characters, the teen characters, parents. And then the second season begins on an equally stupid note. And the way that they, one of the things I was wondering was how they ended the first season. I was like, are they going to like own this premise and like actually go with it? And they do. And it's equally, and then they take it in equally stupid directions. And I'm only about halfway through the first episode, but I want to, if you want something to sort of end your summer with a good, it's like very summer themed because it's set in the Outer Banks. It's like really good, like enjoyable garbage. And I will definitely prop it. I will prop so far with the first season. And it looks like they're also setting things up to kind of fix some characterization mistakes they made in the first one. They kind of like figured out towards the end of the show of the first season. Like a lot of these like kind of shows do that where they like start with one premise for certain characters and they realize, oh, that doesn't work. This other thing works. And now they've kind of just leaned into that with certain characters who were kind of awkward in the first season, but they fit much more naturally into the setup now. So, yeah, it's just like good garbage of high quality garbage on Netflix. And would definitely recommend it. Plus has one of my favorite things, which is I love shows that are set in really specific places and are not filmed in those specific places. And the people who wrote them have absolutely no idea of the actual geography of the place. So, for example, in Outer Banks Season 1, they are in the Outer Banks, which is on the coast of North Carolina, and they say they're going to take the ferry to Chapel Hill, which is, a city in North Carolina. It's the university there, University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. The ferry to Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill is in the interior of North Carolina. So, like, how can you take a ferry? And, like, it's a day trip. They make it say we can just go there and come back in, like, 4 hours. And I'm like, really? Really? Is that, like, could you not Google? Did you not type, like, these locations into Google Map and be like, where is this place? The same thing, like, Bones, and it's understanding Washington, D.C. Hilarious. How I Met Your Mother and his understanding of New York City, frequently also hilarious. Like, it's things like that that I just love. I eat that shit up on TV shows. Like, when they're like, we are in this specific place, and our interns couldn't even take the time to Google actual place names or Google what university is near the Outer Banks. Couldn't even do that. Couldn't even do that. Love it. Anyway.
Details, man.
I love that shit.
Last thing in this section, I started watching Psych. Yes, that Psych.
The original, not the like movies that have been coming out.
Yeah, no, the original. A former, I guess I never taught her, but whatever. Okay, so by like second year in Portchester, there was this kid who sat in one of the rooms I sat in and ended up watching like all of the sitcoms I recommended. Like, she ended up loving Scrubs. Like, Community is her favorite show ever. She watched Parks and, like, basically all the sitcoms we've talked about on this show 1,000 times. She's been bugging me for years to watch Psych. So I finally grabbed Carla. We sat down and watched Psych, and it's really delightful. It's a little dumb, but it feels, I'm still early in season one. It's like, it feels sort of similar to Brooklyn Nine-Nine, except it's not an ensemble in the same way. Like, it's focused around the main guy and his friend, but it's really fun. Like, witty banter, good procedural drama. For anyone who doesn't know, the premise of this 20-year-old show is...
it's 20 years old, jeez.
Oh, yeah, at least. Oof. The premise of this 20-year-old show is a guy whose dad was a cop. His dad made him, like, memorize every detail and notice every single tiny little detail. Like any room he walked into, he would count how many hats there were and memorize what each was, like, as soon as he got there, that kind of thing. And basically, like, he would, because he doesn't like cops, because then he's gonna live with his dad, he would call in tips to the cops. Eventually he goes in looking for a reward for a thing, and the cops assume that he's a criminal, because otherwise how could he have all this information? And so he pretends to be a psychic and opens a psychic detective agency to help cops and individuals and so on with crimes.
With the guy and from West Wing.
With the guy from West Wing. Yeah, it's really fun and funny. Like, it's well done. It's a little too long. Episodes, I think, are like 42 minutes because it was an hour, I want to say, USA show.
It was a USA show. Yeah, it's like the OG USA show with burn notes.
Yes. Yeah. But, like, it was an hour, which seems unnecessary every episode. This very much could have been a 22-minute, like, tighter show. But it's good, and I prop it. Like, I don't love it yet. Maybe as I get further in, I will. It's at least good, though. And surprisingly well made, because I always thought it was going to be really bad. But I'm for it.
Nice.
Before we jump to Reed, because I believe Will added a thing there, I just want to note that... was it you, Ray?
It was.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Ray learned to read.
Oh, wow. Wow.
Smart but sloppy.
Wow. All right. That's just very hateful. That's fine.
I mean, I knew you knew how to read magic cards. All right. Talk about your book, Ray.
Sure. So I initially listened to, about a quarter of this book as an audiobook when I was like in a very audiobook phase. And then I've kind of gotten off it because I've been like, because I don't have long commute anymore. I don't really have like time to like really like listen to books. I prefer podcasts because I'm like just listening to things short in short bursts. So like I don't have to remember key details and all that kind of stuff of where I left off. So I kind of fell off it. But when my when Al and I went on vacation a couple of weeks ago, we just basically spent one of the days just sitting on the beach reading. And I finally read the entirety of the book, A Memory Called Empire. It is a science fiction space opera that is about an ambassador from a very small station who goes to her science fiction universe's gigantic human empire and has a whole bunch of political intrigue and misadventures. That's kind of like, I'm trying to be as like spoiler light as possible because I know, at least at the very least, Will, have you read this?
I have not, actually.
I definitely think it's something you would enjoy. Okay. I am very hit or miss with a lot of science fiction novels because I like...
That's when I cannot lie. But...
Yes, but... So I guess you could say like my science fiction tastes run very space adventure-y, space opera-y.
Okay.
But I also don't want regressive social politics, and very few space operas do both. They're either like very political and like it's all about the politics and the ideas and characters are just mouthpieces for various like ideas and concepts. That stuff makes me go to sleep and makes me feel like I'm reading for work, which again, if I want to read philosophy, I'll read philosophy. And a lot of space opera, on the other hand, tends to have traditional regressive social politics. So it's very – I frequently bounce off a lot of science fiction, but I really jigged A Memory Called Empire, which is an intensely political book, but is much more like subtle and nuanced in the way that it does it. It really does tie the political themes to character and to a really engaging space opera story that they want to tell. And the sequel, which came out in the this summer, maybe this spring, which I'm about like an eighth of the way through, is equally, it's not quite as good because it has multiple perspectives. Like I don't necessarily like a lot of some of the new characters like that. The first book has only one narrator. There's multiple in this one, and I'm not as like into the additional POVs, but maybe by the end of the book, I'll be into them. But I would highly prop A Memory Called Empire. It's really enjoyable. It is both fun and thoughtful. And in my experience, there's not a lot of modern science fiction tends to be fun, but really problematic. If sometimes not even hashtag, just problematic. And or very thoughtful and sleep inducing. And this book gets it right in the middle. Sweet spot.
Okay, I may have to check this out. I pulled it up on Goodreads while you were talking. Just over 4 stars with, 28,000 ratings. So that seems really good. And it's just book one in a silly series?
Yeah, the second one just came out. So I think A Memory Called Empire came out like 2 years ago. Maybe she won the Hugo the year George R. R. Martin had his meltdown. So that might have been last year, actually. So it might have come out in 2019. She won the Hugo in 2020, and this one came out in 2021. So she is pretty productive. So I would expect that the series will like move at a pace.
Okay.
Unlike other well-known sci-fi fantasy series.
I can't think of any.
I can't either. Aaron?
Mm-mm.
I guess if we're doing play, I can go real quick into sort of two things I'll do back to back. Well, I guess it's 2.5. I played the Arena Open over the weekend, did not make day two. So I kind of lit 70 after multiple tries, kind of lit $70 on fire. So I decided to take a break from playing Magic and any card games and jumped into both my backlog and more. I think that the Telltale Batman games are classic at this point, but they came out like the beginning of the Trump presidency. So I've been into some narrative games. I've been playing a lot of them. And so there's one new one called Lacuna, which is a science fiction story. It's a science fiction noir. The setup is that
you're hitting all my buttons, Roy.
I think you'll enjoy this, Will, because I know you've been on a visual novel kick. You've played a lot of visual novels in the age of COVID. Yeah. This one's like pretty new. I think it came out a few months ago. I bought it in the Steam sale. So it's basically set up where you're in the sort of, you play a special agent who works for the government of the most powerful planet in this science fiction's solar system. And a leader of the political opposition from one of the planets that your planet controls is murdered. And you have to solve their murder, among many other twists and turns. The characterization is really, really, really good. Like, you really come to identify with the main character, and it does a really good job of both. There's like five or six times. It's a short game. It's only about 4 hours.
Oh wow,
maybe five. It's okay. Only like $20, and it's like four to six hours. I think I did everything in my playthrough that you could do in the path, but there's like five or six moments that lead to, there's eight different endings that you can get. And you make some very big choices, and you can really, really screw over your main character if you really want to. And make some very bad decisions. I put a lot of work into getting the ending I wanted, and I got it, and I got teary at the end because it's very evocative.
You looked up a particular ending you wanted to get then work toward it, or just
played
the way you wanted to play and got a good ending?
There's a certain moment that happened, and I'm like, I want this thing to happen now. I want this situation to resolve itself in a certain way. So I will use the internet to help me alongside my own ability to make sure that I am making the decisions right, that I get to this outcome that I need. You're presented with a conundrum that complicates the story of Saw about halfway through the game. And I was like, you know what? I want this to work out a very specific way. I'm gonna make sure that I do that.
Okay.
And I got it. And I was very satisfied by the end. I was legitimately teary-eyed at the end. I was like, this is very effective. And you can play the main character like in multiple different ways. He could be a jerk. It does a good job of both combining the Telltale version where, you know, it's kind of the same story, but you're basically just changing the characterization of the lead with some visual novel, like actual, wow, very important characters will die if you make this decision. And sometimes your main character. And so, it's really, really good. And in short, so if you really wanted to, you can play it, get all eight endings. And I can imagine that would be pretty fun. Like, I'm so satisfied, like, with my ending and the way I characterize the main character. I'm like, I don't need to play it again. I got my value. You know, maybe like 5 or 6 years from now I will, but like I feel like I got my value out of it.
Okay.
So I would highly recommend it if that's something you like. Telltale Batman. I've been in a Batman mood. I read another Tom King Batman trade the other day. So I was like, you know what? Fuck it. I'm going to play the Telltale Batman games. I was reminded how good the first Telltale Batman game series is. Except the Joker. Like, there's lots of, like, I came around, like, playing it again. I was like, I like some of the changes that they made to the Batman mythos here. I'm following it. It's cool. I'm into Bruce Wayne. It's Bruce. It's Batman and Catwoman. Love that shit. You are giving me the best Batman and then the Joker. I'm like, fuck. Why is the Joker here? Why are you ruining this perfectly good Batman story with the Joker? And it's like, he's only in kind of part of one episode. Cool. Awesome. The ending. Yep. Okay, cool. Awesome. Satisfying ending. And I'm like, oh, wait. Yeah, the second series is all about the Joker.
Yep.
And I just beat the first episode of the second series this morning. And I was like, man, this first one is so good. It's a very good version of the Riddler. But fuck, the rest of this is about the Joker. Like, god damn it. I don't want, like, why? Why people who tell Batman stories? Why do you always have to do that? Like, even when you have good ideas about Batman that don't involve the Joker, which Telltale clearly did, But they have to go to that well. Like, everyone, they can't, no one can avoid it. It is so frustrating. I'm so tired of Joker stories. So I will beat it because I'm still in a Batman mood, but I'm annoyed as I watch it. I'll still prop it because, like, if you like Batman and you like the Telltale style games, there's literally, like, you should just buy it at this point. You can get it on sale cheap. It's very, very enjoyable. But God, Joker, sick of that character.
While we're here, I have a visual novel thing for Will and then one for Roy.
Okay.
About 999?
The 999 collection is on PS4. It's on sale, I think, for like literally another day, maybe two, Will. You should grab it. It's the first two games in that series. It's basically a murder mystery escape room style visual novel. I think you would like it.
It's intense. And like,
it is intense.
And it's a lot of work, like, if you want. Yeah.
I played through a couple games with Carla, and it gave her severe anxiety, so we stopped. I bought it. So I was just, I liked it, but I don't know if it's exactly my style. It's not a JRPG, so, you know, it wasn't really going to be for me. But it was, I think Will would like it. And since it's on sale, I thought I would throw it out there.
Okay.
I can add that to the list. You get kidnapped, you end up on a boat. And like, on that boat, like, you have to just do escape room stuff, basically.
Huh.
Like, there's a story, and you meet other characters, and some of them are in on it, some are betrayers, yada, yada, yada.
It is the OG
Japanese,
like, escape room video game. Danganronpa, if you've heard of that, like, that was inspired by 999. The third one came out, well, God, not relatively recently at this point, but it feels relatively recently, but it was like maybe pre-Trump. So, which that's, it's good. That it's,
who knows?
Increasingly in the rearview mirror, but wow, 2016 does not feel like 5 years ago. Anyway.
All right. Also, did you play Disco Elysium?
Al and I are going to play it together and just like.
Haven't yet.
Yeah.
All right. We will talk about it when you have played some. I have played a little bit. It is also on sale now, if you care, Will. It is.
I've heard nothing but great stuff.
Yeah, it's the. When is the PlayStation Store sale over? I will look it up while you finish this.
I think it's over tomorrow. Tomorrow as of recording, which means either August, I believe August 4th, maybe August 5th. The game is, you're a detective who wakes up like blind drunk. You drank so much amnesiac and you're trying to solve a murder and it leads you to some weird places. The game has
made it ends the 5th, which would be the day day before this goes live.
So sorry, listeners. I don't actually care. I'm telling Will and Roy things. But yeah, it made me laugh out loud several times. I haven't gone back to it because now Noah's done with camp. So, the TV is no longer mine. And at night, the TV isn't super mine. So, like, I'm having trouble finding time to play it. It will be out on the Switch. I may just rebuy it when it's out on the Switch, supposedly, sometime in August. Although it's not announced for any time in August, so I'm very confused. They said summer 2021.
They also said that the console version was coming out, like, the end, like, the middle of 2020. And so I wouldn't trust, they were, like, a small studio. So
I'm in a rush. Whenever they get to it, it's fine. I'll probably re-pick it up just because PS4 is so hard for me to actually like get to and play, which is very frustrating, but such as being a father. But I like the game is like clever and hilarious thus far. And really high quality, like excellent voice acting, everything. Where the hell are we? Oh. I guess that's a bunch of my games. All right, I beat Phantasy Star 4. It's not very long. It is a classic Genesis JRPG. It's, I believe, one of Will's favorites.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really good. It feels a lot, like a lot, like Final Fantasy 4. I think it's better than Final Fantasy 4, but they are very similar in their structure. It's sci-fi, not fantasy, which is very cool and different.
I mean, Final Fantasy IV starts edging into that sci-fi realm, too.
That's true. Yeah, but, like, I mean in more in their similarity that, like, they give you a cast, characters come and go very quickly, it moves the plot very quickly. It's got very little grinding, right? Like, it just keeps you going with, like, major plot points very fast. Yeah. I think it's a little shorter than Final Fantasy IV, but like it feels similar.
Yeah. I mean, and some of the pacing as well, like with the party members coming and going so regularly, and like your team morphs a lot as the story propels forward in both of those games.
Yeah, that's true. I think it's excellent. I'm propping it. So I have a big three JRPGs from the SNES era, and I was hoping Phantasy Star would push its way on there, and I think it falls reasonably short of the big three to me, which are Chrono Trigger, Final Fantasy VI, and Dragon Quest V, which I think, like, each of those has an argument for the single best JRPG ever. So, like, I don't think Phantasy Star quite reaches those heights, but it's a very, very quality JRPG. It's as good as most of the classics, as long as you're not talking about, like, potentially single all-time GOAT games. It's up there.
Okay. I'm willing to take that. I'm not gonna grief you for that.
Look, it's really good. Like, it's as good to me as Final Fantasy VII. And, like, a little worse than Final Fantasy IX, but on the same track. Like, right, it's as good as what I played of Dragon Quest VIII. And it's probably similar to Dragon Quest XI, right? Like, it's, like, as good as all these very good games. I just don't think it's the best ever. It's also, like, it also helps. The game is exceedingly easy most of the time. But when it's not, it sure does get you.
Sneaks up out of nowhere.
Well, your strategy for major boss battles is basically always the same. It's throw your magic debuffer on, throw your physical debuffer on, and then throw your like speed up once you get it. And then like you go first every round, one character heals, the other characters use their most damaging thing. And like sometimes it'll take a turn or two to figure that out. It is very cool that they have combo attacks though, which I wish the game bothered to advertise at all.
I was actually just chuckling to myself thinking about when you started listing, you know, your debuff and your speed up and stuff. And I'm sitting here trying to remember the friggin' names of any of them, because some things they kind of hide their usefulness, like combo stuff. You don't get like some kind of tutorial about how that works. You just suddenly occasionally trigger something accidentally. And you're like, wait a minute, what happened?
There's
like spells and skills, like the names are not,
they're terrible. It's the worst part of the game. The worst part of the game. There are skills I didn't use all game just because I was like, I now want to look that up. Mm-hmm. So everything has a dumb name, right? Like, especially the magic. Like, Watt is your water or ice, which is nice. But, like, almost everything else has a name. You're just like, wait, what? How am I supposed to know that? But there's a holy spell that one guy has, and Cross Edge that your hero has, that randomly create like a super attack. And like I had known there were combos, but I'd forgotten, and somewhere like three quarters through the game I randomly did those two moves and it did a combo, and I was like, I'm an idiot, I knew this was here in this game. And then I just looked up what they were and figured out which ones were good. But honestly, the best one was still the holy Cross Edge one, like, or the most like consistently useful. So,
that sounds about right.
It was game's just really fun. Like, there's just very little grinding and it's very short. I'm for it. Look up what the names of the spells are. Don't try and figure it out yourself. It's genuinely not worth the time. I also like that they give you enough magic, basically, usually, to like actually use magic in random battles.
Oh yeah.
So again. Props. No props or slops yet, but I've started, just because we talk about these a lot on here. I'm like 4 or 5 hours into Lunar, the Silver Star story complete. It's very pretty with excellent sound and a really nice sense of adventure, and that's all I have to say about it thus far.
Reasonable.
Okay.
I guess two more things. One isn't on here, so let's jump to that. And then the last one, RPG fan, Retro Encounter. I've propped them before here. I think Will started listening.
I did.
They did their let me get the actual name of it right, because it was my favorite old episode of theirs from like the first year of their existence, and they did a second one in the 5 year.
The Essential 10.
The Essential 10, the Essential 10 Part 2, technically, right? So, the Essential 10 2, Part 1 and 2. Yeah, that was July 16th and 22nd. Those were excellent, and I really enjoyed them.
I was eyeing listening to those like on like my runs this week. So good to know.
You absolutely should. They're super fun. It's also like it serves as like a little guide of like you should probably play these games, right? The original Essential 10 is, like if you want to go back, because their old episodes are fine. They're retro, so like it's not like time matters.
Right.
They're definitely like they end up in a really good place, but one of the games they put on there is literally just like one guy who's really kind of nice and harmless. I think his name's Marcos. Really liked Steambot Chronicles, and everyone liked him enough, so a Steambot Chronicles ends up on the Essential 10 1. And like,
I've never heard of that one before.
It's a PS2 JRPG. It's fine. Like it's a very good game.
Relatively obscure,
but like it's there with Chrono Trigger and Final Fantasy VI and like Xenoblade Chronicles and like Mass Effect 2 and Kingdom Hearts and like giants. I hate Kingdom Hearts, but like giant games, like essential games. And then it's like, we really like you, Marcos, whatever your name is. Have Steambot Chronicles. It's like, ugh.
I mean, all those kinds of lists are one, arbitrary, and two.
So I don't think they're wholly arbitrary. Like, I think they do a really good job of hitting games that are important. Like, I think if I were making, like, so their problem, I think, is more that they, like, RPG fan calls whatever they cover an RPG. They like Zelda, so Zelda gets to be an RPG. They like visual novels, so visual novels are under the umbrella, right? Like, I believe Symphony makes one of the two lists, Symphony of the Night, which is probably a JRPG, but like it stretches it right a little bit. So like I think these lists could be tighter, and like they like sort of pay lip service to Western RPGs. I think two made this one, and Mass Effect 2 made the last one.
Like if they were just the retro counter people are extremely in the tank for JRPGs,
right.
Like so they don't play any Western RPGs.
That's not true. They do play Western RPGs, just not as many.
I have listened to like 7 years of it, and they like 15% of their content is Western RPGs.
That's fair. Like they play it, they tend not to talk about it as
much. Right.
But like, so I think that these lists would be stronger if they were JRPG focused, because that's been so much of the focus of the show. Like 999 and then like the three Western RPGs that end up there feel probably like if they were just replaced with like, I don't want to say what games, but like Lunar and Phantasy Star, right? Like these lists would make more sense as a whole. But I think the games they end up with, I don't think they're like missing anything that I would consider like of the canon. Or they're doing a really good job of working their way through like what would be of the canon.
I mean, the problem with RPG history, right, is there's particularly when we're talking about like the history of it, is that older JRPGs aged better for modern tastes than a lot of like the early Western RPGs. Like no one ever puts like Wizardry 8 or whatever, or like Ultima 2, right, on these lists. Even though like if you're like, that's why you, if you're gonna view them at like, if you're gonna try to do this historical canon thing, right, you've got to include some of those games, because some of those games did influence particularly the PlayStation 1 and to a lesser extent PlayStation 2 era of non-Square JRPGs. Right. Like, and there's this like weird back and forth before the genres really crystallized in the late 90s into like, there's like a clear split. There was a lot more like back and forth of ideas when the video game world was smaller. Right. Yeah, and
but that's fine. Like, again, like if you just say that this is going to be like, if you go in and you say this is going to be a JRPG list, that will occasionally pay lip service to other things, because for the sake of inclusivity, you'll be fine.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. Like, I mean, if you are someone who's going to listen to Retro Encounter, like that's something that will come pretty clearly. Like, I have no problem with it. Like, I found a lot of really good games through previously Random Encounter, but also, but particularly Retro Encounter. But they have their own particular, like, tastes, right? Like, particularly because there's, like, five of them who have been making these shows for, like, a decade. And so, like, their particular tastes really do shape, like, the overall, like, span of what they've covered. Like, they've covered, like, a lot of Tales games, for example. Because
they have not covered a lot of Tales games.
If I remember right,
I think they've done maybe one ever, maybe two. But, like, they have not, they've discussed in passing Tales games. They did, like, a Tales Fantasy draft at some point. They had a Final Fantasy Fantasy draft, a Tales Fantasy draft, and a Dragon Quest Fantasy draft. But I'm pretty sure they don't often cover Tales. Most of them don't, like, Tales actually gets really early dismissed from these lists because they think they're very good games, but not great. Like, a lot of what they consider great is very, I don't want to say, like, self-evidently great, because that's obviously self-fulfilling, right? But, like, no one argues Chrono Trigger. No one's like, you know what game is kind of Chrono Trigger. Like, that's not a thing. Like, you just, you come off, right? Like, a lot of the games are, like, as close to self-evidently great as they can. And part of that is just because they've only put 20 games on there. So, like, with the exception of Steambot Chronicles, I think they've done a really good job of hitting the really important stuff. And, like, there's very few just, like, pets on there. It's a little, it's, so they tried, yeah, I don't want to spoil too much here, because I think it's worth trying to figure out their process, but, like, a Zelda doesn't end up on either list, and I always think that's weird. Like, if you're going to call Zelda an RPG, then it should probably have made the 20. But short of Zelda, I think, like,
Definitely one of the classic Zelda should probably be on there.
Yeah, but short of Zelda, I don't really think there's a major series they didn't include. A major Japanese series they didn't include. And Tales, but, like, they discuss and explain that, and I think they're right. I haven't played a lot of Tales, but the parts of three Tales games I have played, it's very bubblegum. Like, it's fun, but it does not hold up to, like,
combat is so frustrating in Tales games if you're not good at that style of combat.
Like, I just straight up put it on easy. I've been playing Berseria, and I
straight Berseria had, like, the earlier ones, the ones with the, like, better stories, like Tales of the Abyss. Tales of the Abyss has a very, very good anime story. Like probably one of the better, like, PlayStation 2, I think it's actually a PlayStation 3 era game, I could be wrong. Might have been, but its story is really, really good. The anime is good. But, like, it's to the point where, like, JRPGs didn't include difficulty settings. Mm-hmm. So, like, I just hit, like, literally my hand-eye coordination can't really get me through, like, two-thirds of the way's bosses. And I just am like, I really want to take this game to the end, but I just can't. And it's frustrating.
Did you play Nier?
No.
You would like Nier Automata. They've got this ridiculously easy mode that makes the game very fun. Because, like, I don't like action RPG combat as a rule. Like, I think, like, wait for the enemy to attack, block at the perfect time, roll, hit, do it again. For, like, every battle is the most boring thing in the world. Just let me hack and slash my way through and get me to plot. Like, keep me entertained and moving enough. That's why I liked Isate so much, right? Like, it was just 90% of the time just run through, hack slash, dodge occasionally, or time your block and just keep it moving. But, like, the easy mode on Nier Automata has been amazing, and the plot is phenomenal. Although I hear I have to beat it multiple times, and I ain't doing that.
Yeah, no, you do have to beat it multiple times. Like,
I'm gonna do it once and then look it up.
Nier is a game I've considered playing many times. I know it's a great game. It's just, I don't think it's for me. Like, I've read about it, I've read think pieces about it. It's like themes and the amount of effort to get those themes are just, like, not what I'm interested. It's too art with a capital A. And, like, I tend to, like, not enjoy big art with a capital A as a 36-year-old these days. Like, I just don't have the energy, and particularly,
it's also just fun and pretty.
Yeah, I mean, it seems pretty. So, but, like, I don't like the action, even on easy. Like, I'm willing to put up with action RPGs on extreme easy if I enjoy the themes or the characters or whatever, but, like, I'm not in it for an art game. Like maybe when I was like 25,
I think you would like it.
At my peak, like I looked at my Steam bag. I was like, oh my God, I bought this game. Oh my God, I put 40 hours into this. But I was like, oh yeah, this came out in 2013. Of course, that was when I was like peak playing art games. And so anyway.
Right. The very last thing I'm playing, I decided that I like Final Fantasy Tactics, War of the Lions, and it might be the game I've put the most hours into in my life.
Final Fantasy Tactics? What?
That's sarcasm, I assume.
Yes,
yeah?
That is sarcasm. Okay.
It's the only job class RPG I like.
It's fair. It's job class. It's one of the best ones.
Yeah, I generally think job classes in turn-based RPGs are unnecessary. But like, it's not the only one I like. It's the only one I love. But like, I think job classes and turn-based RPGs are just like largely unnecessary and make characters feel samey because you just give everyone the same busted build, basically. Tactics opens that up well, and the plot is phenomenal. I've maxed out runs at 99 hours multiple times. I think it's the only game I've ever done that for of that long. So I was like, I need something to do because a lot of my days are watching Teen Titans Go at this point. So I've been playing some, but if I bust out a video game system, Noah gets very like,
let's play Pokemon.
Yeah, not in this play, but just like jump all over me time. And like, but if I'm on my phone playing a game, he doesn't really give a shit. So,
so how are the phone controls then?
Perfectly fine.
Yeah.
And the story is great. And the game is great, and I'm very happy I'm playing it. Basically, I would put it in that class of possibly the greatest JRPG ever. I think it's fantastic. And the phone version is just fine. Like, it does all the things you want your Final Fantasy Tactics game to do. And because, like, you're basically like, because the game is so slow in battle, it doesn't really bother you. And I forgot how much better the War of the Lions is than the PlayStation version, because I've played the PlayStation version the most because I was, you know, 17. But like, the War of the Lions is so much better. War of the Lions is the PSP version, where they were just like, we should retranslate this, add cutscenes, and make sure it makes sense. So props.
Fantastic game. Ridiculous, yeah. Ridiculous difficulty spikes, but very, very good game.
I don't think the difficulty spikes... So, I've heard that a lot, right? There's, like, two, but one of them's real concern is just, like, and to anyone who happens to pick it up, make sure you have more than one save slot. There's this one spot you can save wrong and end up in a battle you can't win.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, if you have more than one save slot, just literally alternate your save slots and you'll be fine.
Yeah, well, I think the War of the Lions does a better job of foreshadowing that moment.
That's fair.
Like, than the first time I played it. I also think, like, it's not a game that, like, when it starts to get very hard, it's not a game that really, like, gives you a signal, hey, you need to really start grinding. Because, like, for about half of the game, you can kind of just, like, progress, right, without too much grinding, but to, like, really consistently beat some of the mid to late bosses in that game, in my experience, like, you do need to grind, and you need to grind with some thoughtfulness, and the game doesn't do a good job of kind of pushing you down that direction.
I can see that. That's reasonable.
Like, that's not me, like, trying to shit on a game.
I get it.
Fantastic. It's
hard. So, the first time I beat it, like, the first time I beat a lot of old JRPGs in my teenage years, I didn't really, like, grind. The only game I grinded on was Final Fantasy VI, and that's because fighting dinosaurs was really cool. But, like, I didn't grind a lot in my early JRPG days. So, the game was really hard, but it wasn't, like, a lot of it was just, like, how good are... Like, you've played classic Fire Emblem, right? Like, how good are you at that type of game? If you're good enough, then you don't need as much grinding.
That's fair.
if you, like, you check the opponent's movement like four times and you like were thoughtful about which skill you leveled up and you save those extra points every time. Like, they were still grinding, right? But like, my first playthrough was not that long. And then like after I beat it, I was like, oh my god, that was incredible. I just want to like see everything this has to offer. The only thing I've never done, ever done, is the calculator thing, because I don't think that's fun.
Oh, with the calculator guy?
Yeah.
Do you have Cloud?
Yeah, I got Cloud. I got Cloud the first time. That's what sold me on the game, because I was 17, right? Like, it came out the same year.
Oh, it was Cloud? I thought it was only in the remakes.
Nah, always. In the original. So I bought the guide to get Cloud. Because, you know, 1997 it was, there was no other way to do it.
That's fair.
All right. Yeah, that's all I got. But Final Fantasy Tech, incredible.
Good game.